Welcome in, Clips and Dip, episode 115 or 16 here as I'm pulling up the rundown live. I'm Adam Oslin. We got Chuck Mockler and William Updike here. Of course, if you missed it the other night, Will came on after a victory and said he's only coming on after victories, and Chuck's going to have to take all the losses from here on out when we do Clips and Double Dip. Let's on do Clippers Talk.
I don't cover L's. I just don't do it.
Coming up on today's show, of course, we're going to preview the Orlando Magic game. We'll also talk about the Blazers game coming up on Sunday, as it is a back-to-back. More Podcast P. We got two episodes now, and I listened to the entire second one, too. And we have some thoughts on that. I don't know if we'll get to any more movie reviews in this one. The last one we reviewed, 65. I had one word, trash. They had two thumbs up. It was weird, but... How are you guys doing, Chuck? How are you?
I'm feeling good. You know, it's St. Patrick's Day. I'm enjoying, you know, a classic Irish stout while we record this. Happy the Clippers are on a win streak. And intrigued by this matchup against the Magic at noon. I'm looking forward to the weirdness. But, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Clippers are on a roll. It's nothing to, you know, there's not a lot to be upset about right now. But I might find something.
I should also mention we're on Spotify, we're on iTunes, we're on iHeart, we're on everywhere you consume podcasts at, including the YouTube again. We're back up. We had a little maintenance issue, but now we're back and better than ever. Will can speak to that. Will, what's up?
Yeah, we're back. Look, what we were using to record before just wasn't cutting it. I had to do way too much work in post. But now I think we got it figured out, so we got something good going on. I'm also good, by the way. Thanks for asking about me personally. It's all business between me and Adam.
I said, what's up? That's all-encompassing. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Things are looking good for the Clippers. Great win last night. I mean, just wow. Great stuff. Great job, Scott. It was good stuff. Yeah, so I'm doing good. Well, Chuck, I'm doing so good, I forgot to do one of these when we opened the show.
Raise the roof. Chuck, since we didn't have you on post-game, and I haven't talked to you about that big victory the Clippers had, although we did chat in the text, in our three-man text, you said, mm-hmm. Huge win, and it was. It was their best victory of the season, unequivocally, definitively. It had to be because there's only 12 games left, and that was not the Golden State Warriors team that struggles on the road. They were desperate to try to get a victory. They gave the Clippers their best shot, and the Clippers just fought back every time.
How like
we survived a 50-point game.
Yes. How often is that happening?
I say we survived a 50-point game. Video technical difficulties. We'll get it. I'm not sure how often that's happening. Has a corner been turned? Can we start that out? Has a corner been turned for this Clippers?
We said you guys fully. If they beat New York, if they beat the Golden State Warriors, we're officially going to say a corner has been turned. We said it a few shows ago. We got to stick with it, right?
It has that corner, though, immediately hit a wall if we lose to the Magic. Like, have we rounded
that's a really
curve,
good question.
A blind curve to go off of a careen? Like, just careen off the edge of a I don't know, a crevasse, whatever you careen off of.
We're back in the L.A. River if they lose to the Orlando Magic. Yeah, I would say so.
There's enough water that we'd float. One thing that was nice, so you're right, we got the Grizzlies win, we got the Raptors, we got the Knicks, we got the Warriors win. One thing that was interesting in that Warriors win that I tweeted about, but I don't think something will be born of this, to borrow Adam's favorite term, is that the Morris ejection seemed to help. The Morris ejection helped the rotations. We got to see more of, I think, players that some guys were excited about. I don't think this changed anything in the future, but I don't know. It seemed to have helped. And another thing that's helped, teams are sagging off Russ, and Ty Lue figured out a way to make that work for us, which is fantastic.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't maybe credit the win as much to the Morris ejection as some other people have been very vocal about. I mean, like, I agree. Like, his spot, especially in closing lineups, should be tenuous. Like, that should be something that has to be considered. You know, it has to be considered moving forward. But at the same time, when he's not there, does that give Russ even more space to do those things that he does, like to crash the glass, to kind of get in those sorts of positions? Because, you know, we've talked about this before, like even though Morris's rebounding numbers aren't great, he's often in there. He's sealing guys off. He's doing stuff. But sometimes that can come at the detriment of a faster player being able to come in there with a little bit more athleticism and actually snag the board, which is what I love from Russ. Just the way he was able to extend possessions for me.
Dude,
I mean,
yes.
Like that to me was like peak Russ usage. He did miss some shots around the rim. It's going to happen. You know, it comes and goes. But, like, if he was hitting those on top of like, the phenomenal rebounding and hustle stuff he was doing, I mean, I think you're looking at – that could be a quality 15 to 20 minutes in the playoffs. And that is not something I thought that we would be saying, you know, post-All-Star break.
And that's his best game as a Clipper, like, by far. Like, that was such an all-encompassing Russ game with the vibes. And as you mentioned, you know, like, the offensive rebounding stuff, like – I mean, he's in a better environment now. It seems like he's responding super well to everything so far that Ty Lue has kind of put together with him. Justin Russo gave us a little bit of scuttlebutt. Is specifically, they're putting Russ at the elbow and dribble handoffs to create space for guys coming off of it, and he's just bought into it. Like, he's like, sure, I'll take up some space. Like, space is the most valuable thing kind of in every sport, and Russ seems to be buying in on how to use it very well for the Clippers.
The two plays that stuck out to me are a couple instances of those offensive rebounds. That one at the end of the second quarter where he took it away from Draymond Green, gave it up to Paul George. He missed the three. Russ gets the long rebound, gives it back to PG. Then he hits it. And then he had two offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter, one where he went with that angled Tim Duncan bank shot and got it to go afterwards, and then another where he just got the putback layup on. So that activity level, I agree, it was his most impactful game so far as a Clipper. Once again, though, he played early minutes in the fourth quarter, but he didn't play late minutes in the fourth. It just seemed like Coach Lue has been more and more starting to figure out exactly how to plug and play Russ in there for when they need him and what they need him for. And him buying in to this degree, and you see him at practice today just joking around with Coach Lue and having a good time. Everyone's talking about how much he's helped kind of just bring that fire on the court during games, but also intensity during practices. And I think that's the one thing we probably haven't talked about enough. Because of the Allen Iverson soundbite, nobody ever wants to talk about practicing in pro sports ever again, even though that was completely taken out of context. One of his buddies had died, and he was talking about in the big picture we're talking about practice, which sucks that gets lost somehow.
But it's like one of the most unfortunate memed moments. Yeah, because the context has been completely lost.
But we've overlooked.
Should we just talk about Allen Iverson for the next 45 minutes?
No, I want to, but no.
I had his shoes where his face was on the insole. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
The Reebok commercials. I remember those, the crossover. But for the Clippers, getting these practices in and getting so much time off at the end of the season, even though it's been uneven with how much time they have off all of a sudden compared to other teams who maybe were getting more practices in earlier in the year, these practices for a team that's implementing all these new guys are just invaluable. Like what they've been able to get out of these and how it's translated onto the court. And everybody keeps saying, we're practicing now and we're practicing live. They're not just doing walkthroughs. Coach Lue said he's hesitant to do it late in the season, but he thinks his team needs it. Those live reps, and there's carryover in each and every game during the four-game winning streak.
Well, and I got to say, too, I feel like the rotations have been much improved as of late, and you got to wonder, is more practice, you know, just the answer to sort of figuring that out and not having to adjust so much on the fly in game, down guys who are expected. I mean, we're still down a guy who's expected to be at least a 20-25 minute guy in our playoff rotation. But you got to think that with the practices, it's really helping to iron out some of those wrinkles, which I think, it's been one of the biggest things that's plagued the Clippers. I mean, they've shot themselves in the foot a bunch of times as well, but like just figuring out those rotations and then adding a bunch of new guys at the trade deadline, like the opportunity to have a lower stakes environment, even though we say iron sharpens iron a lot on this podcast, like in a lower stakes environment, being able to see what's working with guys, how they communicate with one another, sort of how they, those pieces can fit together. I think that that's been huge in what I would consider like nearly a 180 on rotations from what we had seen previously in the season.
Yeah, and we're an old team. I think people sometimes forget that I'm so happy the way that this season is ending spaced out wise. Sure, we end on a back-to-back. I think that, I mean, it's like, it's whatever. We're going to punt one of those games, so I'm not as worried about it. But this time to practice for guys like this, who we have at least two guys who know what it takes to win a championship, and Norman Kawhi, like, this is the one time the schedule's been fortunate to the Clippers, maybe in the history of the Clippers. So I'm excited for this. I almost hope, I just wish Norm was back so we could see kind of the full scope of what we're going to see. Ty Lue said today that Norm's going to be out a little bit longer. He didn't practice today. So the only thing that I really am worried about rotation-wise is trying to fit Norm in with like 8 games left. We don't know when he's coming back. So that's really my biggest concern right now. Marcus Morris, he's just going to play. We just have to deal with it. But, I mean, Ty Lue, I think, has calmed a lot of the fears a lot of people, myself included, had about when Russ was added to this team.
Don't we have a large enough of a sample size for Norm? Like, I'm sorry, I love Norm. I think he's a great addition, but it's not like there's a bunch of like mysteries to his
what
name.
What does he do?
Or like a bunch of crazy stuff we're going to have to ask him to do. He's not Terrence Mann. He doesn't have 15 roles on this team. Like, it's pretty clear what Norm is here to do. And I do feel like I said, we have a large enough sample size that my only concern is just him coming back fully healthy. You know, I don't think that it's going to be that difficult to reintegrate him. It does beg the question, like, whose minutes are going to see the biggest reduction. I do agree with that. But
it's
got to
be
like,
Gordon, right?
Gordon.
Not that I want him to, but who else is losing minutes?
Yeah, I would think that Russ maybe loses some minutes with that second unit. Or they play them both together. I don't know. It's interesting to me. Like, on paper it works, but on paper I also thought like Reggie and Eric Bledsoe would work. So paper, just crumple it up and throw it away. But I'm a little less worried about Norm, I guess, overall, just because of, I mean, God, he hasn't even been here for that many
games.
In
and out, yeah.
Close enough. As far as continuity goes with this Clippers team, he's been here enough for me to feel somewhat solidified in that, so long as he's fully healthy.
I wonder if Coach Lue sees it like, if we need more offense, because there's overlap between Norman Powell and Eric Gordon. If you need more offense, if you need a comeback, Norman Powell's the guy to play heavier minutes that night. If you need more switchability, another ball handler out there, I think Eric Gordon's better in those areas, and he also stretches the floor. They don't win that game against the Golden State Warriors without him, where he had 14 points to try to counter what Steph was doing in that third quarter with his 21. He hit 4 threes there, and Russ set him up for at least one of those. But if Marcus Morris is back also, which we expect him to be in that starting lineup, Eric Gordon was the guy who started the second half in place of him. So there's going to be a minutes crunch, a numbers crunch, between all those guys. I would expect all the guards to play a little less. I just don't know how they aren't at least playing 9 guys throughout the playoffs. Like, so there's too many guys to play. How do you only have 8?
Law Murray, he tweeted out a breakdown today of once Norm gets back, right? You got your starting 5. You got Kawhi and PG playing 35 a game. You got Zoo playing 25 a game along with Russ, and Marcus playing 20 a game. Then, for the bench, he has Norm at 25 minutes, Mason and Terrence at 20, Nico at 15, and Eric Gordon at 20. So, La Murray thinks that Norm is going to be the most played guy off the bench when he comes back, which I'm interested to see how that works considering the crunch for the playoffs. But, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. And, like, I hope we run 10 guys in the playoffs. Like, it seems like we have so many interchangeable guys that if one of them gets hot and one of them isn't, that there's some nice overlap there.
Run 15. Fuck it. Get Brandon Boston out there. Get Amir Coffey out there.
Bring
Let's
Moses
just
back.
The bench. We're so going to be blowing teams out by enough. We're going to have a 15-man rotation in the playoffs.
All right.
That's a William Updike promise.
That's the lock of the week, baby.
So much has changed over the last 3 weeks now. You do forget about how good Norm was playing. This is, I mean, you could say it's his most efficient season of his career, at least, or at least close to that last season in Toronto. He was shooting 44% from the outside. This year he's at 41%, but he got off to that slow start. Yeah. Since then, for the most part, has been red hot. He's been, you know, he was someone who was getting them an easy 20.
In a
basically
half.
Or in a quarter.
He
can walk into 20. He can walk into 20 with his eyes closed.
He's like Lou. He's like a more efficient
and
a better Lou Williams.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he was a candidate for Sixth Man of the Year that last year in Toronto, but he ended up playing too many games as a starter because of how many injuries they had.
Yep, that's exactly what happened. He was too good to be a Sixth Man of the Year.
And would have been in contention without this injury. I think it's slipping away now. But Norman Powell's been fantastic. So you do – it's not like they can just try to figure it out, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. No, they have to find minutes for him. He has to be a part of this team because we've mentioned at times he looks like the third best scorer out there. He looks like the third most important player at times. It's unfortunate that his injury came around then, but it's also the saving grace is they had Eric Gordon to help supplement some of what they're missing with Norman Powell right now.
And he's been phenomenal. Like the threes he hit against the Warriors, it's like, there was some stats someone put up how he's hit more 30-foot or more three-pointers this season than, like, the entirety of the Clippers roster combined. So that kind of FU three range that he has, and he's another guy who's bought in, too. We talk about Russ buying in so much. Gordon's been everything we thought he was going to be when he got signed, which is a vet who knows exactly what he's here to do, and he's here to do it. He's been phenomenal.
I think that was a given, and I've talked about this a little bit before, but with Gordon just – he was, I hate to say this, but he was wasting away. Like
he was.
It seemed like every year it's like, okay, so when are you going to trade this guy to a contender? Like when is that going to finally happen? And I think like this is a huge opportunity for him. And a great fit and a return home. Who doesn't love a return home?
And now, the roundest head in the league, which is helping the Clippers see the ball better. As Will
best basketball mind in the league, as far as I'm concerned. Quite literally.
Yeah.
Is it throwing the other team off? Like they don't know where the ball is at times because they think it's on Eric.
Do I dribble this dude's head?
Who gave that ball a jersey to put on and how is it staying on? Is what they're asking. So the big question.
Round Ball Rock was written about.
John Tesh. They cut that clip off where he's like, I met a guy named Eric Gordon. So the Clippers. The next five games are the Magic, the Blazers, back-to-back, OKC two times, and then the Pels. They're a game out of fourth place. This is the time, and Will, you and I were talking about this a little bit when we were watching the game, where there could be a bit of a streak maybe, but fourth place now seems gettable.
Is fourth place fundamentally different than fifth other than – I mean, I guess you have home court. But the Clippers, the Clippers haven't been that great at home.
That's fair, but they've been worse on the road.
I'd still prefer it in a series against the Phoenix Suns. If it comes down to that's the 4-5 matchup and you can get the four against them by beating them the last game of the season,
yeah,
I'd say that's significant. That's worth playing hard for and going after. And they are right there. Like it's going to come down. A lot of things are going to fall into place the last 2 days of the NBA season. That's what's going to happen.
It's going to be terrifying. That back-to-back, I'm like, what are the standings going to look like when we end the season on a back-to-back? Which route are we going to choose? I think we talked about it last week. Like it's going to be tight as hell at the end of the season.
Here's part of the problem. If the Clippers play good, which they are right now, if they're playing good basketball, they're more likely to be in the 4-5 seeding and have the tougher route to get to the conference finals and to the finals because you're probably going to see Phoenix in the first round. If you get past them, you're taking on the Denver Nuggets most likely in the second round. If they're playing bad, they could have an easier road.
Right.
But they're playing bad.
And they're in the play-in. Because if you're playing bad right now, you're right there with right. We're two games out of seven. So if we're playing bad, we're in the play-in to close the season. Which and I don't want to. I don't want to face. I don't want to face Sacramento at home this playoffs. That's going to be the loudest stadium like in the history of the NBA playoffs. Is what that's going to be.
It's going to be like old Arco Arena. We're bringing our cowbells back, Sacramento.
Could Phoenix slip? I mean, yes. By the standings, they definitely could. Could Phoenix, without Durant, they obviously gave up some regular season depth. Could Phoenix slip to that sixth spot? And could it be 4-5 Clippers-Warriors first round?
So Phoenix has the fourth hardest schedule to go. They play the Nuggets twice. They play us. They play the Wolves. They play the Kings. They play the 76ers.
They do have the tiebreaker over Golden State. They've won that season series. But it's still possible. It really is. They could have lost to Orlando last night. That was a close game down the stretch. I was 3-point
loss. Yeah.
They haven't looked great, and there's still a vibes thing going on there. Like, Kevin Durant doesn't solve all of that. DeAndre Ayton stuff.
He's not a vibes guy. I think that's a fair assessment. and we know that the Clippers like to pick their spots. So if they see a more favorable matchup these last two games of the season, maybe they just throw one of them. Like, I don't know. We saw Daniel Oturu get blocked 15 times against the Thunder a couple seasons ago so they could have their easier path. Like, it's not new for the Clippers to do this.
Are we sure the 3 seed is completely out of reach? I know it's somewhat unrealistic, but because they have 2 games left against Memphis, and they just...
They're 5 games out, though.
They are when 5.
When is Steven Adams back? Because I feel like that's been really hard. That loss has been really hard for the Grizzlies.
Damn.
Looking at all these combinations, it's like, okay, what about forget Phoenix losing now and dropping down? What if they move up
they win?
And they get the 3 spot and the Clippers end up getting Memphis in the 4 or 5 instead?
I don't know if I want to play Memphis because Ja seems to be good for the playoffs and the redemption arc of those feelings. Like if Memphis is the home team, that's another atmosphere that's a nightmare to play in for the Clippers. But I think personnel-wise, We probably match up pretty well. I do worry for our cameraman if we do play the Grizzlies because Dylan Brooks is a menace. And I don't know. That was insane what he did. But I would prefer them over the Kings or the Suns.
I mean, my top
I don't know how
two,
realistic it is. But
my hierarchy of most favorable matchup to least – would start with Dallas and Minnesota, but both of those don't seem to be within reach for a first-round series. Then I'd probably go Memphis, then Sacramento, then the Golden State Warriors, then the Phoenix Suns.
Golden State, I'm not super worried about. I know
is Wiggins back?
That's the thing. I expect him back at some point. They missed him.
Will he be in playoff?
If Wiggins is back, they have the starting five has the best net rating of any team in the league. They're like plus 12.
Yeah, maybe
anything is possible. I mean, like, it's truly anything is possible with the Warriors.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Having Wiggins to throw at one of Kawhi and Paul George is that changes everything. They were missing him greatly. Clippers were missing Norm, but they were certainly missing Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, for sure. Well, a lot to think about. A lot of machinations can happen between now and the end of the season, which feels so close and yet so far away. Coming up, we're going to be previewing the first game of the Clippers back-to-back this weekend. It's a brunch battle against the Magic. Then we're going to talk a tiny, tiny bit about the game against Portland. We have ads coming up. If those have been loud for you, go ahead and turn it down. Some people have experienced that. If that's been your experience, go ahead and do it. Ads coming up in 3, 2, 1. What is going on? Welcome back to episode 116, I think, of Clips and Dip, part of the 213 Hoops Empire. We're talking Clippers versus Magic. It's a brunch game. The Kings play tomorrow night. Will and I are actually going to be at that game, which is super fun. Do we think everyone plays? We're waiting on the injury report to come out right now. First night of a back-to-back, do we think everyone plays?
Can he play?
Can he play?
Simple question.
I think we see everybody. I hope we do. There's obviously not going to be Norm. The Magic played, like we talked about, the Suns on Thursday. No Jonathan Isaac, no Jalen Suggs, who's ruled out with a concussion, which La Murray pointed out takes away one of their better second unit kind of wing defenders, which is good for us and our bench. But Adam, do you think everybody plays for the Clippers?
Who's I think outside of Norman Powell, yeah. I think they're going to – if they've really turned a corner like we believe – this Clippers team has an opportunity on the front end of a back-to-back to try to put away a lesser opponent. You don't want to take anyone lightly. You don't want to get off to slow starts. The Magic did just beat the Heat. They contended against the Suns the other night. They contended a little bit against the Milwaukee Bucks recently. They've been playing slightly better over the last month and a half than they were to start off the season.
And they beat us in a really weird loss.
An overtime loss. I think that was their worst loss of the season. In some ways, I think it was their worst loss of the season. Kawhi Leonard.
Terrible. Like, mm-hmm. It was bad.
Yeah, and the Clippers need to remember that and handle their business against a team that's down because you got a game tomorrow night in Portland. Give yourself the best opportunity to rest some of the guys that are going to be putting out. Well, Ivica Zubac just came back. You know, this is someone who has looked very good. But you need him on this back-to-back. If there's an opportunity where you can put it away early in the fourth quarter and not play him more than 20 minutes, because as much as we talk about how practice has affected their defense, I think just having Ivica Zubac back and playing at this level where he looks like he's back to playing at basically the way he was early in the season with his rim protection.
Euro league level. Yeah, Euro ball level. Yeah.
I feel like in – This is like sort of the way that I feel with Batum and the silent minutes restriction, but I think they should have given Ivica Zubac a break much earlier. Like whether there was
they didn't have the backup injury.
That's true. I mean, it wasn't an option, but like whether he had a nagging injury or not, like it was clear that something was going on. His production dropped off a cliff. His body language was terrible. He was clearly winded all the time. Yeah. Like I think that he needed a break a lot earlier and like, as long as that injury is, you know, it's good by the playoffs, like that's great. But I do think there's something to be said for giving him a little bit of a break or treating him with a little bit more caution earlier in the season. You know, Zoo is always, he's been an Iron Man. I'm sure he's the guy who says nothing's wrong if there's something nagging or hurting or sore. But at the same time, I think sometimes you as an organization or a medical staff or whoever is making the ultimate decision has to realize when that type of production has fallen off. And it's sure, we didn't have the luxury to do it without a backup center. But also, I mean, Adam, like you said on this before, like what would it have cost us to get Plumlee earlier in the season? Like an extra second round pick? Like, I mean,
Charlotte was out of it a month in. I would guess that. Yeah.
That's fair. Something I hope that the Clippers can do well in this Nooner game is keep shooting the ball fantastically. During this four-game win streak, the Clippers have taken fewer field goal attempts than our season average, but we're making them at a 51% clip, which is
that's classic Clippers, higher. Right?
Yeah, like that's, exactly.
I mean, that's the thing. That's what this team is supposed to be good at, grinding out half-court offenses with extreme efficiency. And I think that's been one of the things that has plagued us early on in this season. And I mean, you can't control whether or not the ball goes in the hoop. You could just put yourself in the best possible position. And I do think, like, to the Clippers' credit, you know, with some of the issues with this team coming into the All-Star break, some of that, and I hate to say it, but a little bit of it is bad luck. Like shots not going in.
The Clippers?
Even when you're
luck? Get out of here.
when you're generating open looks or wide open looks and they're not falling down, I mean, I don't know what you do with that. I would simply tell everyone to shoot better, but I don't know how helpful that would be.
Well, and the Magic give up shots. Like, there's going to be shots at all three levels. They give up the second most three-point attempts per game to their opponents, and they let their opponents shoot 57% on two-pointers, which is the highest percentage on two-pointers in the league. So, like, if the process is good for the Clippers, this could be a nice little playoff kind of highlight reel game, if that makes sense.
Well, and speaking of shots, It's interesting looking at this.
I thought
last
you were about to just rip a shot on the stream. I was like, damn.
Jameson.
Yeah.
The last time the Clippers played the Magic, who do you think led the team in field goal attempts?
Is it someone who's still on the team?
It is not.
Is it Luke Kennard?
Reggie?
Reggie Jackson.
And he was horrible.
And I mean, he was super inefficient, but like, it's a different thing. But I bring up the shots because someone who is still on the team, Paul George, took only 12 field goal attempts in that game.
Oh, this was that game. Oh, I was so pissed off after that.
Which is too few. That's nothing. And I think that seeing PG round into form at the same time as Kawhi, I feel like we've been getting more of them peaking at the same time. I think that would be a pretty strong dichotomy to this terrible loss that they suffered earlier in the season. And that was still like, this was still when Kawhi wasn't back to Kawhi yet. I mean, he scored only 14 points in that one. I think that, this is as trades and all the roster upheaval aside, the core of this Clippers team is very different than it was then.
One of the things I found really encouraging the other night was the fact that Paul George didn't have a great game. Didn't have it going shooting wise. He wasn't super efficient, but he still took more shots than Kawhi. He took 21, Kawhi took 19. He kept shooting and knocked down two huge three-pointers, including the dagger in that victory over the Golden State Warriors. And now over their last 20 games, while Kawhi is just otherworldly, 29 points on 54% shooting, 51% from three, 91% from the free throw line, Paul George at 25 points on 46% shooting, 35% from the outside. On high volume, that's not terrible. And it's actually 35.8. We'll call it 36. 86% from the free throw line. And all of a sudden, people are like, oh, is this the best duo in the NBA again? Is this one of their best stretches as the 2-1-3 connection in the regular season? I'm going to say yes, because I don't know another stretch in Kawhi Leonard's career with a sample size of 20 to 25 games where he's shooting over 50% from the outside.
His last five games, Justin Russo put these stats out. Kawhi's last five games, 66% in the restricted area, 53% in the non-restricted paint area, 50% in the mid-range, 71% on left corner threes, 63% on right corner threes, 46% on above the break threes. Unbelievable. We need Kawhi to keep destroying worlds, because we're going to go as far as that, but like, He seems to be rounding into form, and I hope if he goes off against the Magic, he gets to chill out against the Blazers.
Coming into this season, I would have said if he just shot 46% from the field and 38% from the outside and was getting 23 a game, that it would have been a great success, bounce back year, yeah, coming off the ACL, that would have been adequate. Instead, even with that slow start, unbelievably slow start, he's on a minutes restriction, he's coming off the bench, he's at 51% now on the season from the field and 42% from distance. I don't think we can say enough.
He's close to 50-40-90.
On the season, he's at 87.8 free throw percentage.
There we go. He's pretty close. What could go wrong in this game? That's now we're getting into the stuff I like to talk about. What could go wrong for the Clippers? They've been holding on to the ball. They only have 13 turnovers a game during this win streak. The Magic don't really score a lot. On points over turnovers, I'm hoping this continues to hold.
Yeah, the last two games, they only had 15 turnovers total, the Clippers, considering the guys they brought in and playing at a little bit of a faster pace. Although I just looked this up, during the four-game winning streak, they're still 22nd in pace. So even with Russ, they are being choosy out there when they want to get into transition. But they've been beating teams in that area recently, and they've also been getting into the paint. I think the last four games now during the win streak, they're at 50 points or more in the paint in each and every one of them. So I want to see if they keep that same mindset. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard said it was a point of emphasis by Coach Lou, and they were trying to make sure they carried that forward. And it's certainly been happening. I guess defensively, you just can't let up, because I would say, even though the Golden State Warriors shot 55% from the field and 47% from the outside, I thought the defense was good. The problem was Steph Curry is crazy.
50. Yeah, what are we going to do?
And can go 20 of 28 from the field and hit 8 3-pointers, and that skews the numbers so much. But I thought they played great defense on him at times. I just don't want to see them get lackadaisical on that end and have a letdown just because some of those shots went from the Golden State Warriors. If you play that hard against a team like the Orlando Magic on the defensive end, the results will be there. You might not be in nearly as much of a dogfight.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what Markelle Fultz getting switched on to Marcus Morris looks like to open this game. That's going to be kind of an issue. And then I'm excited to see who checks Banchero. Like, we have two. Banchero's a giant basketball player. Like, he's just so big out there that I'm excited to see Kawhi and PG go at him. Ty Lue talked about how, you know, against the Warriors, they were going to draw the hard assignment, which was Steph and Clay and that kind of thing. So this is a nice little test against a team with a big-ass wing and a point guard in Fultz who's hitting kind of a stride right now and feeling himself a little bit. And I hope Marcus can, you know, get his roots down a little bit defensively in this one.
Yeah. Is this draft, this is an aside, but is this draft, the Banchero draft, going to go down sort of like the Zion draft where like the second picked player is like clearly the best player?
Ooh, maybe. We don't know about Chet though, dude.
I've seen enough.
You've seen enough. I already know. I know his whole career already.
He tried to guard LeBron that one time and got hurt. I've seen it.
Yeah, I know it's going to happen.
I do love what you were saying, though, about Kawhi and Paul George taking the challenge of guarding the best player. That hasn't happened enough in the 2-1-3 era for good reason. A lot of the time, you don't want to wear down your superstars that have to do so much on the offensive end, on the defensive end. But I do think there's a statement there when they're guarding the other team's best player. And when Steph is trying to get a switch – and it happened in the fourth quarter, and somebody set the screen, and it was, it was the guy that Kawhi was guarding. So all he got was a switch off of Paul George to Kawhi Leonard at one point in the fourth quarter, and I was just thinking to myself, this is the type of hell the Clippers can put people in.
Welcome to hell.
Speaking of hell, just got the injury report. Kawhi Leonard's out tomorrow for right knee injury management. So the game just became a little bit more difficult. Yeah, let's raise the roof for that. The game will be a little more difficult. And literally seconds after I say, I hope he can play. He cannot. He will not be in that game. He will be playing against the Blazers.
Okay.
We could still beat the Magic, though. I also like that the podcast listeners just got a real-time reaction to us getting the injury report.
That's strategic. That makes sense.
Against a Western Conference opponent, I'm fine with it. He was going to sit out one of them.
Hey, he didn't have a good game against Orlando, okay? He missed that game winner falling away in overtime in Orlando. And he'll be ready to go against the Blazers. That works for me.
All right. Positive Adam Osland out here. So, the most important part, surprise performer of the night. And before we pick, I have a question about my pick for the last game. I said Marcus Morris was going to be the surprise performer of the night. He ends up getting ejected. Clippers win. Is there a path for me to being right there? That was a surprise.
You can't be surprise performer of the night if you don't perform.
But did he perform in getting ejected?
No.
He wasn't
on the floor. That's not performing.
Was something born out of that ejection?
Was something born out of the ejection is all I'm asking you guys. That's all I want to know.
The guys had to win that game after Marcus Morris went out at the beginning of the third quarter.
Yeah,
they had to pull it off for him.
All right. Sorry, seriously, Sean, though, who's your guy to pick for surprise performer of the brunch against the Magic?
This is tough because nobody played bad last game overall. Guys played so well. I'm trying to find someone who had a down game and call it a bounce back like performance. You know what? I'll go with Mason Plumlee. I didn't think he was great in his 17 minutes. He was okay.
Okay.
His defense, the effort is there. Sometimes the execution isn't. The Orlando Magic do have a big team. I'm expecting Mason Plumlee. He had 4 and 5 last game, 0 blocks. I'm going to say he goes 8 and 8 with 2 blocks.
8 and 8 with 2 blocks. Those are borderline Zoo numbers. All right, so Adam has Big Plum. Will, who are you going with?
I'm going to stick with my guy. I'm going to go with Gordon. I think no Kawhi in this one. You get the basketball IQ Kawhi, the baby Kawhi.
You get the you're calling EJ baby Kawhi.
He's older.
Baby Kawhi with a fully developed basketball mind.
Baby Benjamin Button Kawhi.
Yeah, with a fully developed cerebellum already. Unbelievable. All right. Okay. So you went EJ. Do I lose my damn mind?
Marcus?
And say Marcus again? At this point, it's a bit.
At this point in the season, we're just kind of locked in to, our, to a certain degree. We're just.
That's because he's been so bad. That's because he's been so bad. I have to be locked in.
Yeah, but when you didn't pick him, he had a good game against New York.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't think I'm going to pick him. Here's one.
So he has a good game. You're negging him.
Exactly. I'm going. I don't know. This is such a stupid idea. I'm going Amir Coffey.
Whoa! Back to
and that. And a surprise.
Happened. I get
there's
it.
Adam context, Stolmein, because I was going to say Plumlee first, but.
You know, Big Plum's my guy. Well, hey, I like the logic. Amir Coffey got that 1 minute at the very end against Golden State. He's ready now.
And you know what he was in that 1 minute?
Minus two. He's the only minus out there. Well,
but he got to the line. You know, that's what. No, I don't know. I'm picking Coffey because I hope it puts some good vibes out there for him. He was too good last year for kind of what's been going on now. But I also get it. All right, real quick, how do we feel about this Blazers game? Blazers are going to have 2 days off. We're going to have Kawhi back. Not sure on PG status. They're also in the midst of a rough stretch. They've lost their last four. They play the Celtics the night we're recording this. And there was also a report saying the Blazers might shut Dame down if things get out of hand over these next five games. So I have a feeling
he's got to prepare when he's a Clipper next year.
Dude, this is an agenda you've been pushing low-key for the last month, and I'm excited to dive into it. But
it's not a terrible agenda.
I think we might get the full Dame on Sunday. Like the full, I'm trying to right this ship so we still have some kind of playoff idea. Not that
the
it doesn't
Clippers are
do
in their
the
most dangerous position when they're playing a team that's lost, you know, 3, 4, 5 straight. that's I feel like when they're most vulnerable. So I don't know.
I don't have the numbers to back this up, but eyeball test.
Don't need them.
Borderline decent memory. Tell me that of all the superstars in the league who get wrecked by the Clippers in the 2-1-3 era, it has been Damian Lillard. I am pretty certain of this. They have had his number. So that could mean he's circled this game even more and wants to put on one good performance before they shut him down. But maybe they get blown out by the Boston Celtics tonight and the Portland Trail Blazers realize, you know what? 5, 6 games left. Forget that. We're doing it with 12 games left. We're going to start shutting down Damian Lillard and get ready for the trade conversations this summer.
It makes sense. One thing that's going to be big is what Russ looks like on this back-to-back. I think we're going to need Russ a lot against this Magic team with no Kawhi, just speed and whatnot. So, like, he's going to be interesting to watch against this Blazers team.
Well, he had the bad game up in San Francisco against Golden State, but then played really well the next night in Sacramento on that back-to-back.
And that's true. Yeah, this is going to be interesting. Man, Dame's really averaging 33. That's crazy. I'm taking the Clippers to win both these back-to-backs, though. I'm feeling good about these back-to-backs. I love that Kawhi's actually not playing against the Magic. I think I'm fully on board with that.
You got to focus on conference games. Only thing more important, divisional games.
Oh, and we're going to get into that.
Hey, Adam, can I give you a couple of these Dame stats? I'm sorry, but I want to back up my own point here. I want to buttress myself.
We believed you. We didn't.
No, you guys doubted me the entire time, just like the 51-point third quarter. I'm looking at, okay, his last two, he was okay. I don't know who played in that one because it was the start of the 2021 season. So 21-22 last season, he was good. No Kawhi in those. But he's had games where he shot 26% from the field against the Clippers recently, 14%, 21%, 33%, 39%. The 2-1-3 era has not looked good on Damian Lillard. Now, Pat Bev was a part of some of that too, though.
That's a good point.
I mean,
is it going to be
he vocally circled that matchup on his calendar. I mean, he's talked about it so many times. I don't know if he's trying to get traded to Portland or what, but he's talked about it a number of times.
I hope he doesn't get traded to Portland. That would suck, dude. having to play against Bev that much. Are we calling it? Are we saying 2-0? Are we going to come back here for the tripod on Monday and just be basking in a 6-game win streak?
I'm with that.
I hope so, man. I believe that. It's about time. It's about time.
It's about damn.
Not just that. They'll have the 4 seed by then.
And you know what? All right. If they don't come out of this with a 6-game win streak, time's up on the Clippers.
What does that mean?
We will not abide 5-1 over 6 games.
Timeout. All right. That wraps up our preview of the back-to-back. Let us know at Clippers Pod what you think is going to happen for these rolling Clippers against the Magic and the Blazers. Coming up, we're talking one of the first kind of why would you say that moments from Paul George, but we're also going to talk about my favorite thing in the entire world, which is division play in the NBA. So yeah, all that and more coming up. If the ads have been loud, if you go ahead and turn it down, we got ads coming up in 3, 2.
Hey, what's going on? You're back in with Clips and Dip. Hopefully you didn't get your eardrums burned by those advertisements. Okay, so we got to talk about – I don't know if this is going to end up being a weekly conversation, but we have to talk about some of Paul George's statements on the podcast, P Podcast. And then, I mean, Chuck teased it perfectly, but we got to talk about the Pacific Division and just divisional play in general. So, Charles – I think that you've listened to this podcast the most out of this three. So
I've only listened to one episode.
What? I mean, that's still the most.
I listen to both. Wait. I haven't listened to both.
Adam,
I've
listened to Adam,
every
then.
Episode.
Okay, Adam, break this down for us, because I think we got...
I thought
he's episode, getting dragged online because I thought, of yeah, aggregation.
We got some questionable statements from Paul George in this one.
What's happening with him talking about the banners up in Indiana was within a conversation regarding the boos he receives when he goes back there. Now, he didn't bring it up. The other two guys that were there with him did. And they're like, well, they must love you now. And he's like, no, they don't. Not at all.
They very much don't.
I don't
you
know what games they
watch
were watching.
My games.
Yeah. Thanks guys. Thanks my boys. But he had to explain how bad it's been since then. And just, I think he's right, because most guys look at it this way. When you're having success still away from that team and they boo you, it's usually love. It's because they miss you and wish you were still there and didn't like how you left or didn't like that you left. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he wasn't like firing back or going hard or anything like
that.
If you listen to it within context, the way he brings up the banners and his time there and how much it meant to him and talking about the players on that team and relationships with people within the organization, then I thought it was thoughtful. I didn't think it was the 20-second soundbite that's been going around and the way it's being portrayed. If you listen to the entire conversation, I don't think most people in Indiana would hate him more because of that. And if you want to go after people for talking about banners and raising division banners and stuff, fine, we get it. There's guys on Twitter all the time who put up a banner for any Clippers win to mock the fact that other people are mocking it, like the old Eminem and 8 Mile, make fun of yourself before anybody else does it, be self-deprecating. But I'm from Sacramento, and I remember when they put up the Pacific Division Championship banners. And
that's so rad.
I don't know how I feel about
it. Wait, did they call it a championship?
Not championship, but Pacific Division. I don't know what they call it.
Leader.
Trophy.
Yeah.
Winner.
But Lakers fans always mock that, and it's like it's okay to celebrate wins along the way or the journey.
That's what Dame talked about on JJ Redick's podcast. He was like, people don't respect the journey. They only care about the destination, which is true, especially for a guy like Dame and stuff. But like, how do they get the division to matter more? It's the only sport, as Willis said, where the division doesn't mean shit. Like, no one cares about the division in the NBA. Like, sure, you care about the guys you play, but like, structure of the playoffs really doesn't mean anything
good
in terms of the division. Like, how can they make it so people care more? Can they?
Maybe
is it even possible?
Maybe that's what the midseason tournament is, right? Like it's a playoff of guys within the division, and your seeding matters within that. They still got to figure out a way to incentivize the whole thing. But I There's got to be something there.
It's got to be a division cup. It should be like different. Yeah, do a division cup or something. Like, make people care about, like, regionally, obviously, you know, when we play another California team, it's big, or the Suns, it's close, but like, no one cares about the division. It's not important for the standings.
I would like divisions to be done away with in sports for the most part, I have to say. I know your love for it, Chuck.
What?
I'm not.
How could you do me like that?
I'm not trying to poo-poo the Pac Div because I love your enthusiasm for
it. You just had to eliminate it.
Well, here's the reason. It leads to stuff like bad teams getting in over better teams when divisions are heavily weighted, like what we see in football all the time.
Well, not that
heavy.
The
NFC South shouldn't have an automatic bid to the playoffs.
7-10 and you make the playoffs. Right.
7-9, the Seattle Seahawks had that happen to them. I don't like that stuff. So I would rather do away with it altogether and have it mean less. And because I think it was more regional back in the day because of travel and how much
really
more difficult
point.
That used to
Super
be.
Super good point.
I don't
Eliminate
think that's
travel.
The case anymore.
No air travel.
May I say, too?
Only buses.
May I say, too, you could just simply play better in your division to guarantee your spot in the playoffs. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but some divisions could be way better than others, and it's unfair. It's stupid. Yeah.
Play, like it's, I said, simply play better.
If it was that simple.
Has anyone asked Ty why they haven't just decided to win every game yet? but yeah, I don't know how they can make it more important, because every generation, you know, of NBA fan up to this point, divisions haven't mattered. It's not like there was a golden era that I can remember of, like, you know, what you were saying, like, when teams like the Kings want to rile up the fan base, like, yeah, we got this division. Isn't that sick? That's great. But then, like, once you get some sustained success, that becomes boring, right? You're like, great, we won the division. Like, the Clippers won the Pac Div a couple times, and you're like, cool, this is how we should do it. I think not the tournament's lately. A good idea. Like, yeah, not lately. I think the tournament's a good idea, but I don't know. I do agree with what PG was talking about with, like, and Dame with, like, people don't care about the journey. Because, like, you, like, is Charles Barkley the most respected guy who doesn't have a ring?
I would say no. I would say he's one of the least respected guys because of how he's portrayed himself as more of a media figure. Some people don't even realize how good Charles Barkley was as a player at this point. Zion That's before true. Zion, who played all the time.
Watch those old Philly highlights. He is a goddamn
athletic
nightmare.
Monster. Who was smaller than Zion and getting rebounds when it was a bigger league overall and you had to contest with 7-footers all the time. He was a phenomenal athlete. I hate ring culture. I hate all or nothing culture. But did you win the ring? This type of stuff. Well, I mean, we're seeing it with Nikola Jokic and just the MVP talk. You're going to give him a third MVP when this guy has not even won a championship? Well, it's a regular season award, dumbass. And he is that good. And it kind of is a team game still. And it matters who you play with and who is available and how many times was his team actually favored in a playoff series that he ended up losing. I can't think of one. Maybe the Blazers series from a few years back when they won in 7 and CJ McCollum went off. But yeah, I can't stand it's the binary stuff. It's the black and white when there's a lot of gray. I'm sorry, Will. I'm ranting.
No, I mean, I agree with you. Like, I look back at, like, the Budenholzer Hawks, and it's like winning 60 games means something. Winning 60 games without an all-star, like, that means something. And I get that it's like not.
Hasn't he never had like an all-NBA or all-defense or first-team NBA teammate, Jokic? Like, there was some stat they put out where, like, he's never had a teammate who's been, like, first-team NBA or anything.
Oh, first-team NBA? No, yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah,
right. Here's a good example, though, of why you should just stay the course sometimes and not freak out if your team hasn't won a championship yet. We mentioned the Dallas Mavericks on our last show that eventually were able to break through. But before the Milwaukee Bucks ended up winning that championship, if Kevin Durant's foot is behind the line and they go on in that second round series against the Bucks and the Nets move on, I think Coach Bud's getting fired. I think they're having a major shakeup.
Oh, yeah.
You guys remember the discourse and the narrative around the Bucks then?
Yeah.
All it took was Kevin Durant's foot being too big and the story completely changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think a team like the Sacramento Kings this season, nobody's given them a chance to win the championship. But if they don't, if they lose in the first or second round, was it an unsuccessful year? Should their fans not be able to celebrate that? No, they made progress. They're a young team getting better. They made the playoffs for the first time in 16 years. I think it's okay to celebrate the small victories too and not be mocked or derided all the time and made fun of for that or used for meme bait.
Well, that's what's funny too about the NFL, the way it used to be, is like, you know, they'd ask the coach of the Browns 10 years ago, like, what's your goal? And they'd be like, well, every team's goal should be to win the Super Bowl. And you're like, right, but not every team can win the Super Bowl. Like, you went 0-16 the last year, you're not going to win the Super Bowl. Like, you need to have progress and things like that. So, like, I'm totally with it. It seems like the NBA's figured it out. Now we just need, you know, the NBA media to try and celebrate that stuff more, because I think that's a huge part of it, too, is that media doesn't care about the journey at all either, which is, like, really difficult.
Those shows cater to what gets the biggest ratings. So they're still going to lean Lakers. They're still going to talk about teams that aren't that good but have a big fan base. They're still going to talk about the Knicks. So it's partly, you know, it's, I don't know if it's snake eating its own tail, but it goes both ways. You know, it's the fans and
the two-headed snake eating its own head.
Yeah. I and there have been some two-headed snakes out there before. There's some weird stuff in science. But I hate it. And Damian Lillard is one of my favorite players ever because he has not run from the grind, because I think you should be able to still be an all-time great regardless of if you have a ring. But the truth is, how many people are putting guys in the top 10 ever conversations that don't have rings? Tell me one. It's not happening. But the same thing, this ring culture, I think – and it's a bigger discussion. I'm sorry. It got me irked because this is something I talk about forever. I think the reason Kevin Durant went to the Golden State Warriors is partly because of ring culture. He was hearing it all the time. You can't be a top player ever. You're going to end up like Ewing. You're going to end up like Barkley or Stockton, and talked about in that light, unless you win. So he said, okay, F it. I'll make sure I have a guaranteed victory. I'll use the cheat code. I'll go join a team that just won 73 games and blew a series to us, or we blew a series to them, and they blew a series to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the finals, and I'll get a couple of rings. But he got those and didn't feel validated enough or didn't feel vindicated, because then people took the other side. The same people who were saying he has to get a ring, then when he gets one, go, oh, but wait. You just joined a team that had already won. These ones don't count. This doesn't
Now they're like, win it by yourself.
So there's this moving target all the time. But I think it has affected players to a degree, but it hasn't affected Damian Lillard whatsoever.
But when he joins the Clippers, that's not running from the grind. They haven't won a championship.
Exactly. Well, you want to do something historic?
They might win one. They might have one by the time he gets here, right?
This is true. This is very true.
I'm feeling more hopeful. He's new Kevin Durant. Smaller.
Yeah, smaller.
Fun size Durant.
All right. Anything else that we want to send these Clippers fans out while they enjoy their safe and responsible St. Patrick's Day?
Nah.
All right.
I really like the fact that we're going to have a fully loaded, rested, and ready available Kawhi Leonard on the tougher game of this back-to-back. I think it's strategic. I think it's smart. There's no reason they shouldn't beat Orlando even without Kawhi with the way they're playing.
I've always said strategy is the second most important part of the NBA. The first, uniforms. All right. We will have a double dip possibly on Sunday. Definitely one. Possibly tomorrow. Definitely one on Sunday. We'll be doing a double dip. Of course, it depends if the Clippers win or lose. Because if the Clippers win, I will not be on the radio. And if they lose, I will be there to calm everybody down. Adam will be there pre and post game for both those. Always working hard over on AM 570. Will, where can these fantastic people leave us reviews?
So you can review this podcast over at Apple Podcasts or on Spotify now. We'd appreciate it if you left a review. It really helps us out. You don't even know. It really helps us out. I don't just say that. You can listen to us on either one of those platforms. We're also on Stitcher. We're on Deezer. We're on Amazon Music. We're on Google Podcasts. Basically, wherever you get podcasts, you can listen to this show.
YouTube.
Check us out. And YouTube. Yeah, shit. And you can also check us out at Clippers Pod on Twitter. We'd love to chop it up with you. So, yeah,
we absolutely would. This one will be up on YouTube. We will see y'all on Monday for the tripod. talk the rest of the week, and hopefully recapping this Clippers 6-game win streak. Talk to you soon. Let's go Clips.